All right. Who got sleep last night? Y'all are lying. I heard you. Y'all were having parties in your rooms, which is awesome, right? Now, I know, I'm kidding. I know some of you got sleep, but I hope some of you had good girlfriend time, too. Yeah, good. So this morning, we are going to start diving into a key fun topic. And speaking of fun, by the way, at the end, we're going to do a raffle. Yeah, you guys like raffles? At least I do. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to give away 4 books. And so just, you don't need to fill out this whole thing. This is actually a card we use for other stuff too. So literally just put your email address. And by the way, full disclosure, we send out coaching and like articles on some of these things because I write articles when I get new research. And if you don't want it, you can just unsubscribe. But just put it on there. You don't need to fill out the rest of it. And we'll collect it and draw at the end. Okay, cool? Okay. So we are going to talk today about this topic that Sherry mentioned. And I want to tell you how this whole thing started. Because I had actually not been in this world of relationship stuff at all. I had actually, after I got my graduate degree, that was when we were at Harvard, that's where Jeff and I met, and then after I got my graduate degree, I went to work on Wall Street. And I love my job there, but you know, I was an analyst, I analyzed, you know, large Japanese banks, like that was the kind of stuff that I did. And we moved to Atlanta. Jeff and I finally, we were in New York for about 5 years, and then we moved to Atlanta, which is where we live now. And it's sort of a long story, but I had this chance to write a couple of novels. And one of my main characters in this novel that I was writing was a man. And I didn't know how to put thoughts in his head. Like, I have to say what my main character is thinking, right? I can't just say what he's doing. I have to say what he's thinking. But what do I know about what a guy would be thinking? And in some pretty personal situations. So this whole thing started because I would talk to Jeff or we'd be going out to dinner with another couple and I'd go to the other husband and I'd say, can I interview you? And like, here's this scene in this novel. What would you be thinking if this was you in this situation? And ladies, as these men started telling me what they'd really be thinking, half the time I'm like, seriously? Like, I was so shocked by some of the things that I was hearing. And so of course I did more of these conversations, right? And then somewhere along the way, I realized, wait a second, the stuff that I am hearing is so foundational. This isn't stuff that these men say that they're thinking or they're feeling like it happens once every couple of months. The things that they were describing were things that they said that they thought or they felt every single day, multiple times a day. And at this point, I'd been married about maybe 8 years. And so, of course, I'm thinking, why have I not heard this before? And so that snowballed into God just made this, it's really just miraculous. There's no other way of describing it. Long story. But just a miraculous way for me to actually do a big nationally representative survey of men and to do more of this research. And that's what became the book For Women Only, which probably some of you may have seen or have heard. It's a fairly popular book because it's digging into these things that the men around us are thinking and feeling that we have no idea. And here's the thing. I want you to know what I'm going to be sharing today. There's a couple things you need to know. First of all, this doesn't apply to just those of us who happen to be married. That's certainly the most intense application of this every day, right? But I mean, for those of you maybe who are dating or want to be dating, right? Or how many of the women in the room have a son? Yeah. How many women here work or volunteer with a man? See, men are everywhere. And we have to understand this. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit more time on some of the romantic relationship applications, but that's not the only one. So, just so you know, that's kind of the first sort of starting point. Second starting point, though, is really important, is that this is all based on research. This isn't my opinion. In fact, it actually contradicted my opinion most of the time. But that's why it was so surprising, right? But you also need to know, even though it's research-based, and just, I don't want to go into, like, the big details, but just so you know, like, this is serious time and effort and money in this research. Jeff and I now, we've done, For Women Only was the first, we've now done 9 massive, nationally representative research studies of now not just men, but women and teenagers and the workplace and certain marriage issues. We're finishing, we just turned in on Wednesday a book that's our last research project that's on why do we fight about money. Like we study all of these things, but we're making generalizations. Okay? You need to know, especially when it comes to understanding men and women, those kinds of things, there are always exceptions. By definition, if 75% of men said one way, by definition, 25% didn't, right? Everybody's an individual. The key is to look at your husband, your boyfriend, your son, that male colleague you're working with, your dad, whatever that is, and sort of go, is this maybe part of the dynamic? So it just to get you started. Okay, so let's dive in. Big picture, I know this is gonna be a shocker to every person in the room, but men and women are just different in some pretty important ways. Now we don't have time to get into this. This has even begun to be a big question recently. Have you seen all the stuff about the gender questions that people have been seeing? But just so you are aware, this isn't what I'm talking about this morning. This isn't sort of because the Bible says so. This is because science says so. And oh, by the way, all this money and effort we've spent on science has backed up what the Bible has said all along, just so you know, which is amazing. Like, it's really cool for me as a social scientist, but also as a follower of Jesus to see this. It's very cool. But anyway, so one of the main fundamental things that are different that we're not going to have a chance to get into some of the reasons for this, is there anyone here in the medical world? Anyone in here who's in the medical world? Okay. You guys may know some of this sort of just because it's part of your training. But one of the things that is incontrovertible is that literally when you look at the scans of the male and female brains, God has wired us differently. Our brains are literally wired in different ways, which we won't have a chance to get into too much, but there's a lot there. So we're just different. And bottom line, running underneath all the stuff you see on the surface and running underneath a lot of the heartache and the tension between you, this is not just in a romantic relationship, this isn't everything, underneath a lot of that little, why did that make him so mad? Or, boys are just weird, okay? Underneath the surface, it turns out, men and women have 2 very, very different sets of insecurities running under the surface. We saw this, the first time that I really started to see and explore some of this was when we were doing a series of focus groups one night with college age young men one night and then college age young women the next night. And we were in a a conference room. There's about six or eight guys and six or eight girls there. We were in one of those conference rooms. You know those the rooms where you have like the big table and then the whiteboards on the walls with the doors that close? You know what I'm talking about? So we're in a room, two whiteboards. And first night was the guys, second night was the girls. And with the guys the first night, I said, you know, I want to do something different. And I opened up this whiteboard on the wall. And I said, I want to do something a little bit different tonight. I want to spend the whole night, it was a sort of a wall-size whiteboard, basically. I want to chart those things that underneath the surface that we normally don't kind of bring out. Kind of first on this half, the stuff that it kind of, if somebody says this or does this, it makes you feel bad. Like the things that are your worries and your fears, the things that hurt your feelings. I mean, not that any college-age guy is going to say, it hurts my feelings, but you know what I mean. Like, what are those things, right? And then on the right side of the board, what lights you up? When someone says this or does this, it's just, oh, it just feels great. Like, what are the things that you need? So kind of the fears and the needs, sort of that was what we worked. Got it all just right, spent all night on it. They told me what to write. And then at the end of the night, I looked at my watch and I realized, oh my gosh, we're over time, we're out of time. The girls are gonna be here in this room tomorrow night. We don't have time to erase this whole thing, so let's just close the doors. So the next night, I'm in this room, and I open up this whiteboard with the girls, and I say, you know, let's chart, I explain the whole thing, let's chart your fears and your needs as girls. And this one young woman raises her hand and interrupts me. And she says, excuse me, but I object to this language. I'm like, okay. And she says, it's not our fears and our needs as girls. I mean, we're all just people, right? And we have the same fears, we have the same needs as people. And I said, okay, that's totally fine. Let's chart your fears and your needs as people. And so we spent all night on it with these young women, you know, telling me what to write, and we erased and wrote again, got it all just right. At the end of the night, you knew what I was gonna do, right? At the end of the night, I purposely left 5 minutes. And I asked the girls, and I said, you know, the anonymous, they're anonymous, but all the guys were in here last night. You wanna see what they said? And of course, these 20-year-old girls were like, yes, you know? So I opened up the whiteboard, and I stood back, and I watched their faces. And they were shocked. Their faces, they were going, and their heads are swiveling back and forth because there was not one word the same. Not one. Except for, you know, and. The. Not one. So, what was on the board? So here's what we found, and we now, over the years, we have now confirmed this through all these massive, very expensive surveys, etc. That for most of us as women, again, not all, okay, not 100%, but most of us as women, the question in our hearts that's running underneath the surface is, am I lovable? Am I special? I mean, that's what Sherry was talking about, right? Like, that's under there. Am I beautiful? Am I worthy of being loved for who I am on the inside, right? So we love to feel loved. And we love to feel cherished and adored. Like, that's what lights us up, right? That's honestly, for us as women, that's kind of what we think is the whole point of having a relationship. Like, if you're not going to feel loved, what's the point? You know, kind of. That's kind of for most women, right? And that's why it's so hard when you're in that season of not feeling loved, okay? Which is a whole nother topic. That's when we talk to the men and help them understand that. But for the whole idea of feeling loved, for the guys, feeling loved was like, pfft, it was nice, but it didn't make it on the board. And for the men, the question is totally different. the question, that worry, that thing that's running underneath the surface is not, am I lovable? It's, am I able? Am I adequate? Do I measure up? Am I any good at what I do on the outside? Think about this for a minute. Am I worthy of being loved for who I am on the inside? Am I any good at what I do on the outside? Totally different. And it lends itself to a totally different set of primary needs. So that's the first thing that we're going to tackle, is what does that mean for us? Because for us as women, like I said, we love to feel loved. And honestly, for that, because it lights us up, and because it kind of comes out of us naturally, not 100%, but ladies, how many of you feel like saying I love you kind of comes out naturally? Seriously, raise your hands. I kind of want to see. It's usually, yeah, okay, maybe 80%. It's not 100%. But for most of us, it comes naturally to say, honey, I love you. And we do these things for him, whether it's a husband or a son or whatever. We do these things that we hope he'll find to be loving. And at the same stinking time, without realizing it, we might be criticizing him a lot. Or we might be questioning his decisions all the time. Or, I don't know, telling him what to do every now and then. I literally, Jeff and I were doing a marriage conference last weekend. And literally, no, 2 weekends ago. And literally, I said, you know, gave the example of sometimes, you know, we might say, you know, here's, do this, do that, you know, kind of whatever. And you could, I looked out into the audience, and I was watching all these men were vibrating in their seats. Because they were going, I can't nod. Like, I'm going to get in trouble if I nod. Like, but we do these things. And we don't realize that by definition, if we're doing that, we're saying, no, you're not able. We have no idea, but we have to have an idea. If we want that abundant relationship, if we want to truly be the underground espionage agent to the husband, or the son, or the coworker, or our father, or our brother, we have to understand this. So, what does it look like? There's two things that we basically need to know. We need, in this sort of avenue of understanding this, we need to know what hits a raw nerve. There's a raw nerve running under the surface, that insecurity. We don't know it's there, but it's like a raw nerve. We can hit it without realizing that's what we're doing. We have to understand what hits it so we can avoid it. We also need to know how to build up our man in the area that he needs, right? That, how do you send the positive message? So it's kind of, how do you avoid the negative message? How do you send the positive one? Because here's the bottom line, ladies. Here's sort of the fundamental. The men on the survey said, you know, whereas we're so motivated by love, the men on the survey said, if they had to make a choice, and by the way, nobody would want to have to make this choice, okay? This is a false, forced choice. But if they had to, the men said, I would, this is 3 out of 4 men, I think it was 74% of men, said, if I had to, I will choose to give up feeling that my wife loves me. Give it up. If I could just feel that she appreciates me, that she respects me, that she believes in me, that she trusts me, and that she needs me. He would give up feeling loved. All those things are more important to the average man, even than feeling that his wife loves him. Okay? So that's why we have to understand these two things. How do you avoid the negative? How do you say the positive? Now, Before I get started on this, I need to also acknowledge, and this is really important to acknowledge, this is in general. We cannot cover, I won't have the time or the space, the book isn't able to dig into those really specialized situations, right? Like somebody's got a pornography addiction, or there's some abuse, there's those kinds of situations. You're gonna need some specialized resources. But this fundamental stuff, even though it's not gonna solve those specific problems, understanding this makes it easier to solve. Okay, because you're understanding the heart underneath your man. The vast majority of men have goodwill towards their wives. There's a small percentage that just are abusers. It's a small, tiny, tiny percentage. The vast majority, though, have goodwill. They care about us, even if sometimes it doesn't look like it. So here's the okay, back to the two things. We have to learn how to avoid the negative message and how to send the positive message, okay? So avoiding the negative message, what hits that nerve that we don't even know is there? It's anything that says to him, I think what you just did is inadequate. That's it. I think you are inadequate. I think this thing you just did is inadequate. And it's the littlest day-to-day stuff, the stuff you wouldn't even think would matter. And I'll give you an example. So I need to confess, I interview every man I come across, okay? Just, I'll tell you this. It's like heaven help the poor man who's trapped next to me on the airplane for 2 hours. But it's really good data, you know, because you don't know who they are. They could be completely honest. So anyway, I love watching a man's face when he turns to me and says, so what do you do? And I say, I help women understand men. Anyway. Kind of fun. but I got into this conversation with this guy on the plane, and it was actually literally right before Jeff and I were filming the DVD series that actually goes along with For Women Only and For Men Only, right? And so I think I even put this story in the DVD because it had happened like the day before or something. And when I started talking to this guy about his relationship, his shoulders just kind of slumped, you know, and he just kind of, as he started talking about his wife, like he looked kind of defeated. Like I just felt kind of sorry for him. You know what I'm talking about? Like that feeling you get. And he said a phrase, oh, ladies, he said a phrase I had heard so many times from Jeff, so many times. And I had no idea what Jeff was talking about, no clue. And here's the phrase. He said, I love my wife, but nothing I do is ever good enough for her. Okay? How many of us have heard that? I won't ask for a show of hands. So, but I had no idea what he was talking about when Jeff used to say this. Now, because of the research, I thought I knew what he might be talking about. And I said, can you give me an example? And he said, I'll just tell you something that happened last night. He said, my wife and I, we had friends over for dinner. The kitchen was kind of a wreck, and she had to go out for a meeting. And she said, you know, honey, would you be willing to clean the kitchen so that when I come home, we can go right to bed? And he said, sure, no problem. He said, so I cleaned the kitchen. And she comes home from her meeting, and she kisses me on the cheek and looks over my shoulder into the kitchen and goes, huh, and grabs a sponge and starts re-cleaning all the countertops. And he said, it just kills me. Nothing I do is ever good enough for her. Now, I'm looking at some of your faces. And some of you are thinking the same thing I was the first 20 times I heard this, okay? Which is basically, I'm going to say it out loud, dude, grow up. Like, that should not bother you. You're so oversensitive, right? And finally, I realized the reason I am saying that should not bother you is that it wouldn't bother me. He's not me. He's wired very differently. By the way, by a God who knew what he was doing. Okay? And so I asked him, is there anything that would have received that differently? And he looked at me like I was nuts. And he's like, if she just would have appreciated what I'd tried to do. You know, like if I miss the crumbs under the toaster, she can clean it later when I'm not looking, you know? And I realized, ladies, here's what we're saying. When we don't realize, we think it's such a little thing, it's such a minor thing, grow up, right? And we don't realize when we grab the sponge and start re-cleaning the countertops, what we're saying by definition, again, remember, is no, you're not able. Oh, and by the way, that thing you did on the outside, it wasn't good enough. You failed. And it's incredibly painful. And we have, again, no idea that over and over, we're sending him that painful message. So this is one of these areas that we need to ask God to open our eyes. Remember, we prayed last night and gave him permission to open our eyes, to be able to look and see those times when completely unintentionally, and maybe if we're honest, sometimes intentionally, we are hitting that nerve and asking God to show us. One thing, just so you know, is check for anger. And this is a shorthand version, but crying tends to be a woman's response to feeling unloved. Anger and withdrawal tend to be a man's response to feeling disrespected. Okay? Just so you know, it's a clue. It's like, think back. What was it that maybe hit that? Okay? All right. So that's the, and there's so many ways we could go into this, but that's the avoid the negative. Oh, I should mention this. How much time do I have? I don't want to run out of time. Okay. You know, well, I also know, A, you need a break, and B, you have some awesome workshops coming up. So I don't want to destroy the workshop leaders' time either. I can see all the workshop leaders looking at their watches. But one, this is an important piece of this puzzle. I should probably mention this. So there's an automatic question that many of us in the room are dealing with right now, and that's, but what if he doesn't clean the kitchen right? Right? Like, what if what he did is wrong? Right? Like, what do I do? Right? Like, how do I handle it when something... Okay, so I actually started asking, to be completely serious, I got both in my heart and needing to know what to do with it with my husband or my son or whatever, And because I kept getting that question, I started asking the guys as I would do interviews and focus groups, like, how do you handle that? You know, when you just don't like how they've done something or whatever. And it's interesting, the input came basically into and coalesced with what I kind of call it the next day rule. And there's really two parts of the next day rule. Honestly, write this down. Like, seriously, I hope some of y'all are taking notes, because I miss this stuff and I forget it. The next day rule has two parts. The first thing is, ask yourself, is what I'm about to say, what I'm about to correct, what I'm about to do, is it so important that it will matter tomorrow? It will matter the next day? That essentially, is it so important for tomorrow that it's worth hurting my husband's feelings for today? Okay? Like, I can still remember that I had to make this choice when Jeff got the kids ready for school one day. I was in the middle of a deadline something or running to the airport or something. And the kids came downstairs and they were all wearing their normal school clothes because Jeff had forgotten that they were supposed to, I can't remember, it was supposed to wear red t-shirts or something. There was some specific thing they were supposed to wear that day. And yeah, it's worth it pointing out, because I didn't want the kids to be embarrassed either, right? Like, it would matter probably the next day that they wore the right thing. Today, there's some bigger consequences. And so, yeah, at that point, maybe that's worth mentioning. But then here's where the second part of the next day rule kicks in. And this would not have worked for the red t-shirts, but in general, if at all possible, mention it the next day. Because what he's most trying to do right then, when he's cleaning the kitchen while you're out with your friends at the meeting, what he's trying to do is do something nice for you, to make you happy. He's trying to accomplish something, to have this feeling like, I done good. And so if at all possible, don't take that away from him in the moment. Mention it the next day. Like, I can still remember my son when he was pretty young, and you know, he was probably 5, 6, 7 years old, and we were just getting him started on trying to help us with doing the dishes. And so I was just learning some of this and just trying to figure it out. And he put the dishes in all crazy, you know, so like they're not gonna get washed. And I could feel myself wanting to, like, just a second, and redo them all, right? Which would be the equivalent of saying, you failed, okay? And so I went ahead and showed him how you push the thing shut and push the on button, and inside I'm going, oh, you know. But I could see Jeff, my husband, looking at me and going, good job. Like, good for you for not saying anything. And there's something in us as women that just wants it right, you know? Our idea of right, okay? But it was more important for my son's little heart. And when I said, good job, I am so proud of you. No, but it wasn't quite right. Let me redo it. But I'm so proud of you. That was excellent. Thank you for helping me, fist bump. I started to turn away. I literally see I can't remember how old it was, 6-year-old son go. It cracked me up. It was like, yeah, baby. And the problem, ladies, we have totally misunderstood that yeah, baby thing. We think that's the male ego. That's not. That's a deep well of insecurity. We miss what's going on. We see the mask. We see the yeah. And we don't see the reason he's doing that is because he's going, thank God I didn't fail. Okay? So how do we say the positive message? That's how to avoid the negative, how to avoid hitting that nerve. Remember the two parts of the next day rule. If at all possible, mention it the next day. With my son, I said, you did so good with that, putting the dishes in the dishwasher. You know what? I'm going to show you how to do it even better. Let me show you. Wait, hold on 2 seconds. As we're putting this in, see how the water jets go here? So if you face the plates that way, it'll get even cleaner. And putting it in that way, it's appreciating without accidentally tearing him down, because he wants to do better for you. Okay, moving on. The positive message. I keep saying when I get to this. Here's how you send the positive message. So I will confess that being a research nerd and learning my husband's greatest need is to know that I appreciate him, that I respect him, right? Like, I want to start applying it. Well, how do you apply that? I mean, for me, I love hearing the words, I love you, right? Because it speaks to my heart and my insecurity. Am I lovable, right? One thing we tell men in our marriage conferences, I know this is a shocker, but that strong, competent-looking woman next to you doesn't feel permanently loved just because you got married. You know, she has that question, am I lovable every day? Does he really love me every day? And she needs to hear the answer every day, right? So we love to hear, I love you. So I thought, my husband's greatest need is to know that I respect him. So I start following Jeff around the house going, oh, honey, I respect you so much. It doesn't work. He finally, after a while, he was like, time out. Like, I really, I know what you're trying to do. and I really appreciate it, but it just doesn't have the same ring to it. And so I literally went on a quest for a couple of years to try to find out what can you say to a guy that has the same emotional ring to it that I Love You does for us as women. And I finally found it when we were doing our study of what makes the happiest couples so happy. And I've been trying to get this out there now for about 3 or 4 years, so you might have heard this. Some of y'all might have heard this phrase already. But I want you to guess. It's a small phrase. Can anybody guess? Throw it out there. Somebody said thank you. Who said that? Several people did. That's, believe it or not, that's it. Thank you. Okay, the other day at another women's conference, somebody yelled out, "Let's have sex." And I said, that might work too. Wasn't the one that came out on the survey, but that probably works. Anyway, but yeah, no, believe it or not, ladies, it's thank you. And here's the key. It's thank you for the littlest things. It's like literally, thank you for noticing that the lights in the hallway, the light bulbs were out, and changing them. That was driving me nuts. Or thanks for putting gas in my car. Like, no, and here's the key, right? When you say thank you for those little day-to-day things, you know, throughout the day kind of stuff, here's what you're saying. Like, think about it for a second. You're saying, I noticed what you did on the outside, and it was good, and I appreciate it. Like, it just speaks life into the heart of this man that just doubts whether he has any idea what he's doing. Because, ladies, again, this isn't about a big, strong man who thinks he's all that. That's what we think. That's what the world thinks. Ladies, we have to know better. That's just a mask. You have to know that on the inside, that big, strong, confident-looking man is going, I want to tackle a challenge. Yes, I want to be great. Like, I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great dad. I want to be a great salesman or a great pastor or whatever, but I'm really not sure that I know what I'm doing, and I hope nobody finds out. Like, that's the feeling. On the inside, we have to speak to that inner man, not the outer one. Whether it's a, like again, a husband or whether it's a son or anybody else in our life, speak to the inner man, not the outer one. Ladies, the best example that I can give you for this, of what's going on the inside when a guy does anything. And this may sound like I'm overplaying it. Go home and ask your husband this. Seriously. Go home and ask your brother this. I'm not kidding. I heard this word picture when I would ask, part of our interview process, I would ask the guys, tell me what such and such feels like. Like, do you have a word picture? Do you have an example? And it was interesting when I was asking about this underground self-doubt, this vulnerability that we don't necessarily know is there, right? What does that feel like? We actually heard the same word picture. I mean, literally, we were going all over the country, all over the world, really. I probably heard this word picture 8, 9, 10 times, the exact same one, where this one guy said, it feels like, you know, when you were like a little kid and you were in kindergarten or your first grade and you were in craft class, you know, and you would make an ashtray. Right? Okay. For all of you who are millennials and younger, we used to make ashtrays in craft class. Like, the millennials are like, what? Like, literally, we used to make ashtrays in craft class. All right. Now it's a pencil pot or something. I don't know. But it used to be an ashtray, okay? And this guy said, and when you were a little boy, you know, I would make the ashtray, and it would be, you know, of course it'd be all misshapen and it's all wonky on one side and the colors are running, you know. But I would bring this home carrying it so carefully, so worried about dropping it, I'd carry this home to give it, present it to my mom, the most important woman in my life. And my little heart, my little six-year-old heart would just be beating so hard, hoping that what she was going to say was, "Buddy, great job. This is incredible. You did such a great job," as opposed to, "It's all wonky on one side." And he said, "We're still those little boys inside who have done something, whatever it is, cleaned the kitchen, dressed the kids, took the kids for the day, done something at work, whatever it is, we've done something, and we're holding it up for presentation to the most important woman in our life, hoping she's going to say, 'Oh, thank you, great job.'" And that this person sees the inner me who, yeah, is going to make mistakes, is going to do stupid things, is not going to clean the kitchen properly, isn't always going to handle things perfectly, but that she believes in me anyway. That is so powerful for a guy to know. Now, what happens, just as a quick note, what happens in those cases where you're like, "I'm not sure I can say that. I can't say that I feel that way right now." Okay? There's two things I'm going to suggest to you. One is we have something called the 30-Day Kindness Challenge. And you can go to jointhekindnesschallenge.com, and we have found it's simple. You do the same three things for your husband or your son or whoever you're trying to have a better relationship with. I mean, you can do this for anybody. This isn't just a male-female thing. This will improve any relationship. But especially if we're talking about you're not sure that you agree with them, there's hurt there's whatever there, try the 30-Day Kindness Challenge. You're going to do the same three things every day for 30 days. It is powerful at helping you understand if there's anything you might need to work on, but it also changes the total dynamic of the relationship, and you see things you'd never seen before. So that's one thing. Another thing is I just, literally just yesterday, wait, what was the 12th? Was that Thursday? Yes. Friday?
Thursday.
I think it was the 12th. It might have been the 13th. It might have been yesterday. Literally just launched a podcast with Family Life called Questions Every Wife is Asking. So if you go on my Facebook page this morning, I think there's a link to the "But What If My Husband Isn't Worthy of Respect" podcast. There's a whole bunch of other podcasts, but I think the one on my Facebook today is the link to that one. So just go to I think it's just Shanti Feldhahn on Facebook. And by the way, if you want an easier link, because my name is like very complicated, go to shanti.com, which is shaunti.com, and you'll see the links to Facebook there. Shaunti. Okay, so, hold on, let me see what we're timing. Okay, I gotta wrap it up. Also, I'm just going to mention one other topic here real quickly. You know what? I don't have time for this topic. Put it this way. There are so many other things that I would suggest if you like podcasts, if you like articles on different topics, just explore the resources that we have on our website. It's completely free. It's part of our ministry, just to be able to serve you. So let me just wrap this up by saying, if you don't believe what I'm saying, if you're not sure that this is really true, don't believe me. Try it. And just see what happens. I was picked up for you know how I said last night that sometimes I do pastoral interviews where a pastor will interview me on stage as the sermon time? because I don't accept preaching invitations, but I will do these pastoral interviews. And because often, you know, a pastor will want to talk about relationships or whatever. They're doing a sermon series. And so this one pastor's wife, it was a sort of an associate pastor of this larger church. Her husband was not the one who was going to be interviewing me. But when I was flying into, I think it was Detroit, and she picked me up, and she told me the story as we're literally driving towards the church where her pastor husband worked. And she said, I have to tell you something that several of my friends, we had four of us who were sort of a tight circle of friends, and we decided to do a Bible study on your book and not tell our husbands we were doing it. And just sort of, we weren't sure that we agreed with what you were saying. We weren't sure if we were all in on it. But we decided, you know, this is research-based, let's try it. And so on week 3.5, which had been the week before this conversation, so 1 week before, they were 3.5 weeks into this, she comes home and she finds her husband pacing the living room. And he's just doing, you know, that whole kind of agitated feeling that you see sometimes in people? And he was just clearly agitated. She's like, what's wrong? And he's like, nothing, nothing. What's wrong, right? And you know, now she's worried, like, what's going on? And he's like, okay, fine, I'll tell you. It's just, we're so in love. And our relationship is better than it's ever been. I'm just worried that God is preparing to take one of us home. And I said, well, did you tell him? And she's like, no, I didn't want him to think I got it out of a book, you know? Like, you gotta tell him. Like, he's gonna hear it from me in just a couple of hours. So anyway, but they took us out to lunch after church, and listen, the thing is, it is so foreign. Men are foreign. They're alien, right? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, or whatever the book was, right? But this is a beautiful alien. This is how God designed him. So ladies, let's work with that rather than against that, okay? Okay.